Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's 8 o'clock, it's Thursday, you're listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christine. I'm in studio tonight with my lovely co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, and we are sponsored by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California. We have a number that you can call if you'd like to talk to either one of these gentlemen we have on the dais tonight. It is 818-602-4929, that's 818-602-4929, and please call. I'm sure they'd love to talk to you. Bobby.
Jim.
What a great week.
It was.
What a great week. We had a great show last week. I was just like totally just captivated by Margaret. She was just awesome.
Wasn't she fun? And I
she
just
was.
Finished reading a second one of her books.
Oh, did you?
Yes. They're just fun.
Yeah, Jerry started reading hers Friday morning after Margaret gave it to her. So.
And there are lots of twists and turns. You think to yourself, oh, I know where this is going. And no, it's not going there.
That's true. Yes. I have to claim a mea culpa last week. As we were going to our break, I forgot to turn the microphones off. And the next thing I know, our engineer, Ronan, is standing in the window yelling at me, doing the cross talk thing, you know, turn the mics off. So I swore to him I wouldn't do it again, so I promise I won't.
We're learning.
We are learning, and it's a learning curve. But once again, we're a year and a half trying to get here.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
This is our fourth show, and I'm just digging it. Why don't you tell us who we got tonight?
We have tonight.
Fun people.
We have two amazing gentlemen with us tonight. Can you tell them apart?
Yes. I can now, but I couldn't when the other one had a beard.
We know we're on radio, so you can't see, but the two guests that we have with us tonight are Eric Heisner and Al P. Bringus, and they both are, well, we're going to learn a lot about them this evening, but they happen to both come in today with gorgeous blue shirts and really fabulous bandanas and similar hats, and so
yes.
It took us a moment to try to remember which was which.
they were the Heisner-Bringus twins.
So let me tell you a little bit about them, and then we're just excited to have them with us, and we'll get chatting. First, I'm going to introduce Eric. He was born in Genoa, Illinois, and is a graduate of the Columbia College, Chicago. Eric H. Heisner is a screenwriter, director, actor, and author, and the passion he possesses for working in entertainment seems to run in the family, beginning with his grandfather, who played piano for silent films in the 1930s. Eric worked on the hit TV show ER, the feature film High Fidelity, and had minor roles in History Channel programs as well as Pirates of the Caribbean. Upon completion of the award-winning Western TV pilot, Friend of the Devil, Eric became known around town as the next generation of Western filmmakers, having his first novel, West to Bravo, which we'll be speaking about tonight, published by a New York publisher, has put another notch in his storytelling resume. Welcome, ooh. Eric.
Nice job. Oh, thank you.
That's better than four pages, Bobby.
Wow. All the highlights right there.
There it is.
You know, we want to get
she
all
caught
that,
you, Eric.
We want to get all that great information from
we do.
Eric. We don't
we
want
do.
To hear me rattling
welcome.
On.
Tell us more. Tell us more.
Our second guest is Al P. Bringus. And Al, it's an artist, actor, and horseman, Al P. Bringus' love for the Old West and frontier that's influenced him to create pen and marker original works of art. He's inspired by legends such as Ford and Wayne, Russell and Remington, and it is their work that helped shape and mold this artist's imagination and desire to create. Al's most recent artwork illustrates Eric's novel, West to Bravo. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Eric Heisner and Al Bringus. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Nice
yay.
To be here.
Thanks for the clap. Huh?
Yeah, all right. That's the studio audience.
Well, that was the reason that they're both here, because Al did illustrate Eric's book.
Absolutely.
He did a fantastic job. He did 25 illustrations for them.
Yeah, they are great, too, book. I have to tell you. He really captured it.
Thanks. They look great on radio.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything looks... I look great on radio.
Well, you can actually see all of Al's work. It is on our website, scvoutwest.com,
yes,
and you can go to Art Gallery and then actually go, Al's name is there, and you can actually see all of the work from the book. But we divert. Let's get into chatting with Eric and Al. I'm sure you have something you'd like to ask.
I do. As I was reading your book, Eric, as I mentioned a little bit before, I felt like I was watching a John Ford movie.
Oh, yeah. He's the best.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Cavalry Trilogy, how can you not have, like, crystal clear DVDs of that movie? Yeah. I mean, they're just wonderful. Yeah. And I could almost recite where they were going next, and it was kind of really cool to read that book. So I applaud you. You did a great job.
Well, it's a fresh adventure, you know, familiar-type characters, mm-hmm. and a little bit different territory, but it does have that familiarity to it that Western fans really respond to.
And like myself, I'm also a horseman, and I noticed that you really get the horses correct.
Well, thank you.
And that's a big deal to me because, you know, a lot of Louis L'Amour books and stuff, they rode those horses to death. and they didn't in real life.
Yeah.
Now
you got to take care of your horse.
You did, because that was your buddy and that was your transportation.
And you
happened to have your character, Holton Lang, ride a horse to death when he's being chased.
Yeah, well, he had a special circumstances.
And it did happen, but I mean, you got it right. And that's really great for the equestrian community because I'm sure they'd love to read this book as well. Yeah.
And do you envision it to be a film at some point?
That's the plan. I'm a Western filmmaker, and a lot of people have asked me. I've written dozens of screenplays, and they say, "Well, I want to read your stuff," but you can't hand someone a screenplway because it's, you know, it's like reading kind of chopped up cliff notes. But I want to get my stories out there. I'm a storyteller, and it was a bit of a learning curve, but I found a novel was a very satisfying way to get a story out there. And then when I talked to Al, you know, I said I kind of like to get some visuals to this because it's a very visual book, and I'd like to have some pieces. And he said, "Well, let me try some things." And so we put our heads together, and he came up with some wonderful stuff.
How did you two meet?
On the film Friend of the Devil.
Okay.
Well, actually, just before that, we've got a mutual friend that we used to exercise horses for. And Eric and I are probably the only two people that I'm aware of, anyways, that dresses period and rides in the hills of Griffith Park. And one day I'm sitting at Circle K.
I used to.
You used to, too? Oh, great.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun to do that. And I'm sitting at Circle K, which is a place you can rent out of. And Eric and this mutual friend of ours is coming back in from a ride. And I see Eric in period costume, and I'm waiting to rent a horse, and I'm in period costume. And I looked at our mutual friend and said, "I need to know the name of his tailor." That might explain our mutual look tonight.
Well, and I was going to say, you use the word costume, but to me, it's just period dress. I don't think of it as costume because if you're wearing it on a Saturday afternoon when you're going to go horseback riding, to me, that's not costume.
I wear it out back when I'm building Adobe with the kids.
Yeah, it's what you wear. It's who you are. You're steeped in it. And I don't think of it as costume, but I understand what you're saying. So you met there, and then you discovered you had mutual interests.
I was casting Friend of the Devil, and it's a trick to cast people that are competent on horseback. It was a low budget production, and I couldn't afford to have anyone that couldn't hit their marks or was going to have an accident on horseback. And so Al, he was a good horseman. I went riding with him and checked him out. And then he got himself out to Alamo Village in Texas for the first part of the film, then up in the Alabama Hills for the second part. And we became fast friends after that. That's right.
You did, huh?
You got to stick him on a horse, see if they can pass.
So tell us about that, Friend of the Devil. Tell us about that.
It's a TV pilot, and I'm still pitching it around. It's got me a lot of work in other projects. It's got me a lot of the History Channel work. It's got me a lot of jobs, but it's a TV pilot we're pitching around, trying to get the Western back in the living rooms, something that you can watch with the grandparents, can watch with their grandkids, family entertainment. It has some, you know, just like Western Bravo, it has some consequential violence in it, and it can ride that edge, but it's something that the kids can watch. It's like a John Wayne movie. You know, John Wayne, there was violence in it, but it wasn't Peckinpah violence. It wasn't blood squirting everywhere. It wasn't Tarantino violence. It's stuff that kids can understand, like Star Wars. It's simple stories, good guys, bad guys, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Friend of the Devil takes place in Texas. It's about some Texas Rangers, and it would follow a lot of different stories. I'd like to see a big cast of characters, not just a few main ones.
Now, when you were a youngster, your dad was in Wild West shows and was a Civil War reenactor.
That's right. He started doing it when I was about 7 years old.
So you were kind of hanging around reenactors and such for a long time. Is that
and their characters. Jim will know their characters. You know, something you want your young 7-year-old son absorbing.
Oh, I always think that it's a really great thing that families do together.
I'm really close with my family. And my father in particular, he really fostered that love of the West for me. And, he's a great character actor himself.
And was he in anything that you've worked on?
He was in Friend of the Devil. He played the Captain of the Rangers.
Very fun.
And he's been in most of my films in small parts here and there.
Jim, you must have.
I do. And I'm sitting here looking at a list. And I'm thinking, I've seen a trailer now 4 or 5 times for this short that you did called Coyote Bill.
Okay.
Talk to me about Coyote Bill. It looks like it was just damn fun to make.
Yeah, Coyote Bill, it's pretty much hot off the press. He just got a short edit together, and we filmed it at Roy Rogers Ranch out in,
Victorville.
Oral Grande area.
Oral Grande.
Let's see. You want to talk a little bit about it, Alan?
It's also, I think, a story that's looking to grow and have different veins also. They're looking to flesh out the characters. The main character is Coyote Bill, and Eric plays the marshal chasing Coyote Bill.
And it's an action piece. Mm-hmm. You know, the director, he is high-caffeine, action, horses, which for actors is just fun. I got to, all weekend riding, Al's like, I got to do bucket list stuff, just charging through the water, shooting guys off horses, hanging people. We just got to do it all.
A bottle to the face.
Oh, yeah. Al does his own stunts. Yeah.
That was a stunt that went wrong.
Not for the camera.
Again, if you'd like to call in and talk to our guest tonight, the number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I have a question. And there was a lot of similarities between, as we had spoken before, Hondo and Stagecoach, and there's in your book, West to Bravo. And your main character, of course, is patterned after Hondo Lane.
Yep, he's a buckskin.
Buckskin
independent
scout.
Yep.
Is there any thought or plans to bring him back?
When I initially wrote it, I write a lot of stories and I get it out there and I feel complete with it. I've had a lot of people say I'd like to see more of this character. And so over the last few months, I've been kind of milling about it. Al and I just did a road trip out to Winterset, Iowa. A lot of time in the car clears your mind, the travel, and started going over a few ideas. I think he will be coming back for another adventure.
Good.
He was a lot of fun to write.
I like the character, yeah.
And it's just one of those, you get those characters that just, you just love visiting them every time.
I had one, Jolly Goodman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jolly Goodman, yes.
Jolly Goodman was my bear.
Yeah, yeah.
The antithesis of the protagonist.
And you just can't write enough good lines for him.
No, you can't. Well, they actually write themselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I The Hunter was going to be one book, and now he's in 10. So that's what happens. I mean, the books write themselves. And I think as you go further, I think you're going to find that too.
And every time you get out horseback, just the stuff comes to you. Once you've kind of opened yourself up to that story and different, I read a lot of True West magazine and stuff like that. And when I read something, I thought, what if Holt Lang, and what if he, hit these group of characters and we went here? So it's.
Now, when you're writing your book, have these ideas that have been rolling around in your head for a long time? That you've wanted to put down, and just now you found the time in your life where you could do that.
I went to film school and I graduated when I was about 22. So that's why I started writing pretty much every day. I take Sundays off so I can one day to sleep in.
Yeah.
But I pretty much write every day, and it's been a habit, I guess, for almost 20 years. So I have a lot of stories out there, and it's just a muscle that you need to keep exercising. I find it's exciting to, writing a novel. I felt a growth as a writer. I've been writing a lot of screenplays and some poetry and songs and stuff like that. But as a novel, it's, I felt a lot of growth, and it's very exciting to find something new. And
Now, if you wrote music, we'd have a hat trick.
There you go.
I've done some songs, but we'll have to have Al sing.
What about you, Al?
Well, let me just add this to I was very honored that Eric asked me to be part of the project. I've enjoyed illustrating and doing artwork for a long time. And at some times in your life, certain things kind of get put to bed for a little bit and then reawoken. And a few years back, I started creating these celebrity silhouettes. And that's where Eric got to see a little bit of my work. And then he asked me to participate in the book. And it was a true privilege to be part of it, to be able to get that much work out in one publication, and then to have it be an integral part of the story as well. I'm very proud that it's out there, and we've got a second book that we're in the works with right now. And now that you've asked him if Hondo Lang is coming back, it looks like maybe a third book. But as much as we can keep doing, we love doing this. It's our passion, and we're eager to find an audience for it. And I think that we have. The thing that's wonderful about what Eric does is that he keeps finding new veins for us to get our work out. He didn't stop with the screenplays and making films. He developed or wrote a novel so that we could reach another target audience, which is hopefully bringing them all back around to then eventually back to the films and then maybe getting some notice for the screenplays that he's already got, under his belt. So we have a plan for it. We've got lots of interests, and that trip to Winterset, Iowa just really juiced us, and, good things will be coming out of that for sure.
It was a good adventure.
And what was there?
I believe we have a phone call, folks.
Wonderful. Welcome, caller.
Hi, this is the Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to?
William Fisher from Carbondale, Colorado.
Hello there, William Fisher.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
You're on the air with Eric and Al.
How you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Bill. How are you?
Good.
We're so glad you called in. Do you have a question or a comment you'd like to share?
I do. I was wondering how relevant is the Western modern day society, and also Eric, comment on my favorite director Sam Peckinpah and his influence on your work.
Well, I think the Western is very relevant. The Western's a morality tale, and a good morality tale never goes out of style. The Western's a good venue to do that because you don't have the technology. People are more self-reliant. You have to be to survive. And the Western's a survival story. And basically all good stories are about survival, but whether it be a single mom surviving her circumstances or a cowboy out on the plains or anyone. People want to hear about how people overcome their difficulties and survive. And Sam Peckinpah, he's one of my favorites. I don't write in his style particularly. He's a Bloody Sam. They called him that for a reason. But I definitely enjoyed like Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid, stuff like that.
Well, he made great movies, there's no doubt. Ride the High Country, my favorite.
And I'm probably not a director like Sam. He used to have throwing knives on set, and he'd be throwing them at the production office door. You never wanted to, you always wanted to knock first. You didn't want to open that door and get a knife in you. But Bill, tell your middle name. You got some Western influence.
Oh, yeah, William Boyd Fisher.
There you go, Hoppy.
That's right.
One of my mom's favorite actors.
Yeah. And Bill, he's a filmmaker, not particularly Westerns. He does a lot of stuff, a lot of crazy stuff. He'd probably be closer to Sam Peckinpah than I am.
So I don't know. We maybe need to have you as a guest in the future.
Yeah, I could. Bill, he's one of those characters I met. I used to travel to Colorado quite a bit for work in between film jobs. And Bill, he's a talented artist. He's a filmmaker. He's an iron worker. He's just an all-around crazy guy. A lot of fun to be around.
He's a renaissance guy.
He is. Yep.
Jack of all trades.
There you go. Anything else you'd like to ask tonight, Bill?
Happy to hear Eric on the air, and wish him all the luck. He's a great, talented guy.
He's a good guy. We're glad he's here.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I had a question that you gentlemen will be able to answer, I know. You made the comment about that the writing was horse correct. And I wonder about firearms, because I'm not an expert in either of those things. But, the Winchester, there's a very special Winchester in this book. And I was just curious about...
I caught you on that one.
About it is a very special Winchester.
and I just was curious about the authenticity there.
Well, we're authentic 98% of the time. That Winchester is a Big Lou Winchester, and that's John Wayne's known for that. The Rifleman's known for that.
92, yeah.
And that's a 92. And this story takes place after the Civil War. But the thing is, with that 92, you can spin cock it, which is a cinema thing. It's not, no one would want to do that. You end up knocking your teeth out like you see in the book. Or
get shot in mid-twirl.
Technically, you can't get shot mid-twirl because the firing pin isn't
not
there.
Not by yourself, by the guy that's pointing it.
Oh, yeah. You definitely get shot by him, yes. Whoever you're having a fight with, they're going
to
win.
Yeah, it's like I was telling my wife that it has to be a 92 because if you try to put a loop lever on a 73 or a 66, it'd break your wrist.
Yeah. Pop the cartridge out, too, I think.
The cartridge just drop out the top, too.
Yeah.
It's special the way the 92 grabs the rim of the cartridge and holds on to it, ejects one and slams another one into the chamber. That's why that you can do it with the 92. Can't do it with the 73 or 66.
I'm glad I asked the question, though, because
that was a good question.
Well,
but that's for all the Western film fans out there.
And I think because we were talking earlier about the book being written in the third person is also what makes it feel like the reader is really part of the action. It didn't happen yesterday. It's happening right in front of me. I'm actually, I'm there as a witness to it all. And I think that's why the moments with the firearm, I was really getting a picture in my mind and thinking, wow, am I picturing this correctly?
It's not a normal thing to do with a gun.
Not being somebody that knows firearms.
No. Years back, and we're going to go back into the 50s and early 60s, the movie Western's idea of a Winchester was a 92, and everybody carried a Colt single-action Peacemaker, which just wasn't the truth.
Even in the Civil War.
Even in the Civil War, yes. That's always cracked me up, too. Or they modified the Colts with the bar underneath them to make them look anyway.
You know, when we did some of the illustrations, I was talking with Alan, we did a cavalry guidon, and it's a John Ford-style cavalry guidon. And we looked at research, what the real guidons look like, and we looked at what John Ford had, and she wore a yellow ribbon in Rio Grande. And we said, well, what do we want to do? Because we can go authentic or we can go with John Ford. And we look at each other, let's go with John Ford. Because that's who inspires us. That's who inspires the story. But the cross swords over the letter was a John Ford invention. He knew how to make it look good, really appeal to the audience.
That's really
so
interesting.
We veered off with film history with actual history.
May I ask? Do you have a question?
No, we're going to take a real
quick break. Okay.
So we'll be back in a few seconds.
Welcome back to The Writer's Block. I'm Bobby Jean Bell here with Jim Christina, and we're chatting with our guests, Eric Heisner and Al Brinkus. And if you have a question or comment, or you'd like to ask a question like, what's your favorite Western film, Eric and Al, give us a call at 818-602-4929. And that's a question that I wanted to kind of go to a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
We've been talking about what inspires you, and I guess I would like to know, of the films or literature, what would you say are your top three that you look to?
I'm glad you said three, because everyone wants to know the number one is.
Oh, no, I would never do that.
It's like picking your favorite kid.
Yeah.
I can pick my favorite three kids, but not my favorite one.
Well, if you only have three kids. Then.
And that other one.
And the one that lives with his mother in Oregon.
My favorite three would probably be Rio Bravo. I've been watching Lonesome Dove a lot. That's probably one of the best. And Hondo, it's just a great film. I just watch it over and over again.
Well, I'm surprised. Okay, I'll throw this one in here because
he's number four.
This is usually on Eric's list here, but Monty Walsh, the original.
Monty Walsh, right.
That's some good horsemanship there.
Oof. Yeah, that
with Lee Marvin and Jack Palance.
Right, that was a great film. Let's see here. Lonesome Dove, You Stole That From Me. You know what I really like? I like Open Range a lot. I think it's maybe one of the best gunfights on film I've ever seen. And the length of it is just, I never get tired of it. I watch it and break it down as a filmmaker. And it pleases me over and over and over again. Books-wise, though, I'm a big Jack Schaefer fan. Monty Walsh, the book. It's my favorite book. I am a Louis L'Amour fan, too. Hondo's right up there. But Jack Schaefer, again, with Shane. That's a great movie and a great book.
Books for you, Eric? Anything that...
I don't do much reading.
A man of action.
Lonesome Dove is a great book. It reads just like a screenplay. I guess it was based on a screenplay, so that was inspiring for me. I just did an article for True West, and I had to come up with five of my favorites, and I'm drawing a blank what they were.
No, that's okay.
Mike Cox does this great book about the early Texas Rangers, and he's an authority. I think he's based in Austin, mm-hmm. but he does some. He's done some extensive research on the Texas Rangers. I read a lot of nonfiction, mm-hmm. Western stuff, because some of it's better than the fiction. It's just unbelievable some of the stuff these guys went through.
I know you'll want to ask a question.
I do. But I want to give our numbers first. If you'd like to call in and talk to Eric or Al, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Okay, let's talk about the future of Western film, books, TV. Where do you think it's going?
I think this year is a big upswing. Tarantino has his coming out in the winter. Texas Rising, wasn't historically correct, but it was a lot of fun to watch. I haven't watched the last episode yet, so don't tell me what happens.
No, it's not on until Monday.
Oh, okay.
So I can't tell you what happens.
But I think, that definitely broadens the audience, raises the awareness. I think there's another Kurt Russell Western coming out this fall, Bone Tomahawk. Should be pretty entertaining. And they got Westworld developing. Mm-hmm. They're doing that for HBO. If that can hit the numbers like Game of Thrones or anything close mm-hmm. to that, that'd mm-hmm. be great. I think there's just a lot of good stuff.
Sure, even on TV, Justified just finished. We got Longmire, Hell on Wheels. Maybe we're catching the wave at the right time.
But you're getting these Western characters. Even in shows that aren't Westerns, you're getting these Western characters that have that mentality. And that's, I think there's a strong appeal for people.
Yeah, Justified character was...
Contemporary cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A cowboy in Kentucky.
There you go. In Harlan.
In Harlan County.
Yeah.
Converting a novel to a screenplay. That's got to be... Stay up late, drink coffee, go crazy.
Yeah, the book is always much better. They're just... Writing the book, it felt like I was directing the film. Because I could... Every actor's mannerism, the way he thought, the way he moved, I could control all that, put that in there, put that in the audience's... Put it right there in front of them. For a screenplay, you got to cut all that stuff out. It's dialogue and setting, where they're at, what kind of action happens. But it's so whittled down to the bare bones.
So now we're going to take West of Bravo, and you're going to write a screenplay from your novel.
You betcha. You betcha. We're going to get it out there.
Okay, so you're going to take my novel, The Dark Angel. You're going to make a screenplay out of that. What kind of sweat do you have to go through to do that?
You got to read it a few times. You got to kind of jot down the highlights, and then you got to condense it. Wester Bravo's probably as far as novels goes, it's more on the short side,
right.
So it'd be a little easier. A lot of Elmore Leonard stuff was on the short side, mm-hmm. but he was the first one to say that, hey, Hollywood, they're the ones that pay the bills, so throw a few stories out to them, and don't make it too difficult for them to screw it up. But you got to kind of find the highlights, find the important characters, find their essence, and whittle it down and try to condense all that into a visual story.
So by the time the first scene's over with, you got to know who this guy is.
Yeah, you
pretty much got to have his whole story.
Minutes, yeah. Yep.
Gotcha. I'm going to pass it over to Miss Bell.
Well, I'm going to ask about the writer's block.
Oh, good question.
And actually for both of you as creative as creative artists in your own right, do you experience, you know, the creative block where all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you're dry or you haven't, you know, you're blocked? And what kind of experience is that? And how do you...
I just tell Al to quit whining and get back to work.
So you actually use a block.
More like a 2x4. For me, doing the artwork for the book, or even for my own celebrity silhouettes or anything else that I'm putting on paper, the tough part is to you're finding your inspiration. Sometimes it comes really easy, and when you're looking for an image or something, or a partial image, so that you can create something more from it, when you're struggling to find it, it feels like it might not ever end. And sometimes you find it, you know, the first 5 minutes you're at the library or looking on the internet, or, you know, maybe you're in a store and you see it in a painting or something like that, and you use a partial image. But as far as being blocked, it's the most frustrating thing there is, because I'm eager to put something down. I'm eager to get it out. I'm ready for it. Everything's moving in one direction, and then all of a sudden the brakes hit, and it gets really frustrating. And then also, too, when you're doing it to deliver on a deadline, that also...
Well, that's got to be a problem.
That adds the pressure to it. You know, an artist doesn't like to be rushed, but, you know, you got deadlines. And it was great working with Eric, though. Eric helped me tremendously. He knew what his vision was. For the story, he knew what he wanted to have in the book, and he helped me look for the inspirations. And so we would collaborate on them, and which was always fun. I think Alfred Hitchcock said that making movies, what was fun for him was developing the screenplay and how it was going to be shot. Then when it was time to make the movie, it was going to work for him. Working with Eric and figuring out what we were going to put in the book was a lot of fun to do. And then when I had the inspiration and I was able to put it down on paper, that was a lot of fun to do. When Eric's not there and I'm having to find it on my own and it's not coming, then that's where it really starts to become, you know, not so much fun. You feel the pressure then.
So do you get up and you walk away from it for a while?
Yeah, and sometimes the funniest thing, I could be walking my dog and all of a sudden, oh, there it is. That's what I need to do to this piece, you know. So, yeah, getting up, and I'm sure it's probably the same way with writing. You know, you might have a block, you get up and you move around and something comes to you.
If you get up, you stop. So you don't ever get up.
Go have another scotch.
What about you, Eric?
Not writing is easy. So I sit down and I write every morning. And some days it's a lot of fun. Some days it's hard work. You know, I'll tell my wife sometimes, I'll say, oh, I just had a great, you know, this morning. It was just flowing out. And she's like, well, isn't every day like that? Well, not really. You know, sometimes you got to pull it out, but you got to keep going. And because then it starts flowing. But you just, sometimes you got to pump the well, sometimes it's just flowing.
So when you say that you write every day, are you writing on the same project every day, or are you working kind of on multiple projects?
If there's no deadlines for anything, I tend to stick with the same project, run through a draft, just to keep my mindset on it. If I have a deadline for something else, or if I'm trying to get something ready for a screenplay competition, or I've been doing some book reviews now. If I'm trying to do that, I'll fit that in. But I try to keep in the same mind wavelength, one story at a time.
Now, you've chosen West to Bravo as a novel. Do you write short stories as well? Or
I do, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the writing process, the difference between what you do for a short story versus a novel?
It's very similar. I've written a lot of short stories. This is my first novel. The short stories, I guess it comes from starting as doing short films as a filmmaker. That's when you're in film school, you do short films. And so you kind of think on that short, short story format. And then you find you can't sell those anywhere. So you only do it. Sometimes you'll get one that really grabs hold of you, and I'll get it on a road trip or something like that, and I'll jot down here and there. And I'll sit down, and in a week I'll crank it out, tune it up best I can, just because I know the inspiration's fresh, get it out there. I don't know what it'll be later. But it's done, and I got that story out. Sometimes you just have stories you just have to get out there, mm-hmm. And they're not always westerns.
That's most of the time.
Jim, you must have another question for these gentlemen.
Actually, right now I don't. No, I do.
Okay, we're done.
Nice talking.
Hey guys, you can go ahead, back up, and go home.
Go home early.
Why do you write?
I'm a storyteller. That's why I do most of the stuff I do. It's telling the story, entertaining. I guess as a kid, I probably got in trouble a lot because I was trying to entertain. But
yeah,
this is a much more creative outlet for it.
It really is. Okay, here's the big question. A lot of writers that, and a lot of people are interested in how we as authors and writers come up with stories. And do we outline them? Do we write ourselves outlines? Do we outline each chapter? Do we? Margaret Brownlee does not do that. And I must confess, I don't either.
Yeah.
Eric?
It depends on the story. Some of them I kind of map out like I would a screenplay. And some screenplays but you can tell in the style, you know, it'll be one kind of stream of thought that kind of travels through, and you can see it in the story. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. But I try to usually know where I'm going. I don't really know what's going to happen in the middle, but I know where I want to end up, and that helps me form the characters and the decisions they make.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it too.
Yeah, you don't want to get lost. You don't want to get, you know, three quarters into this thing and say, this is a dead end.
Right. I know where every chapter is going, but I don't know what's going to be in that chapter.
That keeps you coming back the next day. You know, when I stop writing, my last sentence every morning is, you know, I write what I want to do for the morning, and then I'll do a few sentences more for tomorrow.
Right.
And then I read those, and that gets me – it kind of keeps the pump going.
There you go. Primes the pump.
Yeah, it gives you a leader.
Really, that's really good advice. That's really good advice. I have a question that as a reader, and you've also both identified yourselves as readers as well as the creators. How do you feel about the electronic book versus the page, the written word on the page? Do you have any feeling as a reader? Do you prefer one over the other? And as an author, are you seeing, you know, the difference in the ebook versus the hardcover book?
I'm actually amazed how popular the ebook is. It's, you know, for me, I'm a, you know, old school traditional guy. I'm not big into technology and stuff like that. I use it. But when I talked to the publisher and they offered me a contract, I said the important thing for me is I'm a filmmaker. I want to give people something tangible. I want to have it a hardcover book, something people can hold on to, and something that, you know, with Al's artwork in it, you might not pick up to read, but you'll thumb through and you'll look at a few of the illustrations. You might read a chapter, and those are the kind of books I enjoy. And my shelf is full of stuff that I enjoyed from a little kid. I can remember when I read through it, how many times I've thumbed through it. I might not have read it cover to cover every time, but I've thumbed through it. So for me, that's my preference. But the Kindle ebook has just been amazing. My publisher did a promotion just over the weekend, and they sold 1,500 copies on Kindle. And it was just, it's just amazing. But it gets it out to more people. And there's people out there that can, you know, they can zip right through the books, and that's what they need, because they don't want all these books. They don't want to be visiting the library, returning books. They don't want a bookshelf full of stuff. They're not collectors. You know, I tend to collect things, Western and others. But,
well, I think that is it's an interesting dialogue going on between authors and writers, and between publishers and readers. Is that? And I don't think the ebook will ever totally replace the written word on paper, but there are certainly pros and cons to both. And as you're talking about being able to see the books around you that have influenced you and have been a big part of you, versus when you look, you know, at your electronic reader and you can scroll through the titles, it's not the same as being surrounded on the bookshelves in your home with those books that have really made a person perhaps be a lot of who they are today.
Yeah.
You know, and yet there's such wonderful reasons why to read electronically. And I just can sense that there's a great debate out there about, you know, one versus the other.
Well, the electronic books, I think they travel pretty well. You know, if you're going to be gone for a while and you're a big reader, that's a nice way to go.
Yeah, you can load like 20 books into your Kindle.
Yeah, you don't have to take a stack of books with
right.
you.
Yeah.
And kids do embrace the technology. And it's good that there's a lot of kids. I have young kids, and they cruise through books so quick. I wouldn't want to have all those books around that. You know, they can download those, and I think it's great to keep the stories out there. I think it's
for us old folks, though, we have a hard time turning machines on.
Yeah, it's nice to have something in your hands that's tangible.
You have to hand it to a kid and say, here, can you turn this on for me?
Turn the page.
And then they call you a gramps and they hand it back to you laughing.
Yeah. Or remember that you have to keep it charged.
That's exactly right. We're going to take another real short break and we'll be back. And I want to talk with Eric about his thoughts on using a publisher or doing some self-publishing. Back. And right now I'd like to let you know that Bobby Jean has another radio show on Thursday mornings. It's with Gary Holt and it's called Campfire Cafe. And it's on Thursday mornings at 10 o'clock Pacific. And I believe that would be...
It actually is live.
Alabama, right?
12 o'clock out of Nashville.
Oh, Nashville.
So Nashville, okay. Central Standard Time, 10 o'clock here in Los Angeles. And you get it at www.equestrianlegacy.net. And it's called, yes, Campfire Cafe, and it's a terrific show. The first half is always a musical guest, oftentimes Western music or country music, and then the second half of the show is equestrian-based, and we always have just amazing guests from the equestrian lifestyle world, and it's just a really fun show, and it's a thrill to have that opportunity. My Thursday's my radio day.
There you go. I wanted to get that in.
Thank you.
This is LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. Now, let's go to one of the big controversial things now. We spoke with Court Joyner in several different occasions, and Court, he's one side of the fence, and then he's the other side of the fence, so it's really hard to tell with him. Self-publishing versus a publisher.
Well, I'm pretty new to the publishing game. It's been a pretty wild ride for me. I've been very fortunate, and I feel I've been fortunate that I didn't look real hard for a publisher. I got a recommendation from a friend that had a coffee table book with Skyhorse Publishing in New York. And when I submitted West of Bravo, they said, well, you got good timing. We've actually been looking for Westerns, which floored me right there. You don't usually hear, well, we're looking for Westerns.
Right.
And so they reviewed it and took a few months and kind of nerve-wracking. And then when they put me under contract, I wasn't quite sure, you know, how this all works. It's my first time through it. And so we did the rewrites. We finished up the illustrations. And then we went through the whole process, and it was, looking back on it, it was very stressful for me because I couldn't believe that it was actually going to come out. You know, it was going to have a hard copy in my hands. And the publisher actually has been really, you know, for me being a first-time author, they've been really, really supportive. They did a big book pub push for me, and they got it on the bookshelves. They're selling it in the UK and France, Germany, Australia, Italy, and they're, you know, I can't complain. And it's, you know, they're a mid-range publisher, and it's understood that authors, you can't just turn into a publisher and sit back and wait for your royalty checks. You got to get out there and do it. And I think they brought me on as an author because I go out to these Western festivals. I'll speak about the future of Westerns. They knew that I wasn't just going to be sitting back and bothering them. So I've done quite a few festivals. We got to be part of the Buckaroo Bookshop over at Santa Clarita, and that's it just gets us, you know, puts a, you know, when you're out there, you're basically selling one book at a time,
right?
And it's, you know, meeting, talking to people and sharing a passion, and it's you know, for me, it's been very rewarding. And it's,
yeah, you're not going to get rich at the Buckaroo Bookshop, but you do meet a lot of people.
You do. That's a lot of fun.
Well, and that's a great publishing house. They publish quite a few horse equestrian-based books.
We do.
Training books and such, and they also do Western history, nonfiction.
Mark Bedore's
book was wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful, and
job.
They did for him, yes. So it's great that you're with a publishing house. Had you investigated self-publishing at all, or you just
I've been looking around and kind of weighing the pros and cons, and so we'll see what happens with the next project. And, you know, I'm bound to come across one they're not interested in, and I'll have to look into it. But it's coming from a filmmaker background, I've done short films where I'm wearing all the hats. I'm doing, you know, the producing and the acting and the writing, and when you're doing all the jobs suffer. And I feel a little bit with the self-publishing, if you're doing all those jobs, that unless you really put the time in 100%, some of it's going to suffer. And right now I don't feel confident that I could do all those jobs as well as someone else could do them. Mm-hmm. But it's as I learn, and every day I'm learning new stuff, and there's different levels of self-publishing too. There's ways you can do it all yourself, or you can have different helps through. There's some smaller publishers that'll help you along.
Right.
So I'm doing the research and all that. But I'm not against the self-publishing. There's been some great stuff, and especially for what I do, going to the festivals, I'm kind of the big means of distribution mm-hmm. for myself.
So. Right. I think that I've read a number of self-published things, and the one thing that I often wish for is that the author had invested in some editing assistance. There is oftentimes I'll read a lot of pages and think, you know, this could have been condensed.
Well, you see one mistake and it pulls you out of it.
Yeah,
I had three very good editors that worked on this.
I worked with the primary editor, his
assistant, and then the copy editors come through and they find, you know, with a fine tooth comb, uh-huh. and they're real good. They didn't change things. They made suggestions. They said, okay, this is unclear. You might want to rework this. And they're really nice to work with. And I was very blessed.
That's really interesting.
Real quick, in the time we have left, what are you working on, Al?
Well, we just got done wrapping up Coyote Bill. We are working on the second novel that Eric's got in the works, and that's pretty much what's on the horizon. Nothing new. I don't have anything on paper mm-hmm. right now. Actually, we just got back from Winterset. I wanted to mention this, and I did a new Searchers image, and that took off and did very well for us. And every time Eric and I show up at an event, we're always trying to bring something new. Mm-hmm. So if you do see us and you do come out to another event, hopefully we've got something more interesting for everybody out there.
Excellent. And they can reach you at website?
At al_bringus@yahoo.com.
Okay. And that's your email address?
That's my email.
Do you have a website?
I don't have a website.
No. Okay.
Facebook page, though.
Right. And Facebook. Yeah. Two Road Together. What is tworoadtogether.com? Mm-hmm. Facebook. Or no, it's two Row Together on Facebook. We also have Eric's got a website.
Yet another John Ford movie.
Yeah, that too.
There you go. Yeah.
Eric?
Let's see, I'm headed to Texas in a few weeks. My wife's family's from Texas, so I go there and we spend some time at family ranches. And my wife, she'll fly out with the kids, and I'll fit in a nice little road trip out through West Texas, probably drop down into Big Bend area, do some more research.
There you go. And that's your projects are, of course, another book. And
yep, got another book.
And the shorts you just finished. And
yep.
You've been a busy boy.
Next film going. We'll be at the Lone Pine Film Festival this fall. And I'm excited about that.
That'll be great.
Yeah, that's what my cousin did when she called in that one night.
Yes.
You ever been to the Lone Pine Film Festival? The first phone caller we actually had this show was my cousin from Lake Isabella.
Nice. But that's a legendary event.
I'm still smiling here from Bill Fisher. I haven't talked to him since I've been running back and forth to Colorado. So it's good to hear from him.
Well, it's been fun having you guys on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been a privilege. Thank you.
Bobby, who do we have next week?
Next week, our guest is J.R. Sanders. And we'll be talking about both a fiction and a nonfiction book of his.
Yes.
And we love J.R.
We
It'll
do
be another
love J.R.
really fun hour.
Say hi for us.
Okay.
We will.
Call in and ask him a question.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I would like to say that if you are an author, a blogger, a screenwriter, an editor, publicist, poet, or songwriter, we want to hear from you. We are booking for this show, and contact us through our Facebook page. That is The Writer's Block Radio Show is a great way to reach us. And I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Dog Publishing and Out West.
That's excellent. And with that, we're going to take it out. And everybody have a good night. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks,
Jim.
Thanks,
always Jim. Good to
Thanks
see you. I'm glad to see you're holding the wall up for us. And 1, 2, 3, we are out of here.